we put the Mountain Dew cups because we pour little amounts in a little cup. Yep. We could just, you know, these elites are running through there quick. Right next to the pickle juice. And guess what happened?
That's a tough one. Man, I saw that a mile away. Oh, man, this Mountain Dew is going to taste, holy crap.
I have it on video. It's quite
Oh, that's so good. What mile is that, aid station?
It's at mile 20 and 40.
You're lucky you didn't get murdered.
Howdy, this is the Wise Runner from the great state of Texas, and you are listening to the Big Ass Runner Podcast, where we entertain and encourage the everyday trail runner. Remember, if you're asking someone if they're a member of the Big Ass Runner herd, Google it yourself or make sure they have safe search on. Here's your host, Jeff Carroll.
And that is why Johnny is the Wise Runner. Definitely do not search Big Ass. Keep typing, because you never know what you're going to get. Well, thank you, Johnny, for that awesome introduction. As Johnny said, my name is Jeff Harrell. This is the Big Ass Runner Trail Running Podcast, episode number 186. Fun show for you today. We have a special guest. His name is Sid Garza Hillman, and he is in the trail running space in a lot of different ways. We'll talk about many of those. We'll also talk a lot about, he has a brand new book out that you're going to want to check out, and you'll find out why during our conversation. It is awesome. Sid is awesome. That is our show today. Just one segment, because it's that good, and we were able to really chat about a lot of different things, so you'll enjoy that. But first, we are headed down to Bandera this week. By the time you hear this, Bandera will have happened. We will have hopefully completed our fourth year in a row at Chiapas Aid Station. And we will have a full recap of the Bandera 50K and 100K and our experiences, all the stories from Chiapas next week, in next week's episode. That will be episode 187. So make sure you check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think a lot of the listeners that are hearing me right now, some of them are headed to Chiapas. They're headed to Bandera. They're going to run the race. They're going to serve at an aid station. We got some friends that are monitoring and running another aid station as part of the Bandera course. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And then I had an opportunity to coach a couple of athletes who are very new, sort of a, hey, these are road runners. They want to try an ultra marathon. Would you give them some advice leading up to Bandera? So we got an opportunity to do that. That was a lot of fun as well. So just a lot of stuff, a lot of great content coming next week. So make sure you tune in for this week and next week, and of course, all the weeks following. But with that, let's get going on episode number 186 of the Big Ass Runner. Well, now joining us on the Big Ass Runner Hotline is Sid Garza Hillman. Sid, welcome to the show.
Jeff, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have you on because, and we'll talk about your book in a little bit, but you're talking to some of the greatest people, some of the everyday runners balancing life and jobs and big goals and trail running. So I think, you know, what you do and what you talk about is really, really going to resonate. But I'd love for them to get the big, and I say them, it's the Big Ass Runner herd, is what we call our listeners.
Nice.
I'd love for the herd to learn a little bit about you. So tell us where you are in the world and some of the things that you're into. Because I was going to say, you know, Sid, the YouTuber, the small stepper, the rider, you're into a lot of things.
A lot of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff going on. So tell us a little bit about where you are in the world. And a little bit about your background.
Right on. Yeah, I live in Mendocino, California, which is a little town about 3.5 hours north of San Francisco, and moved up here from Los Angeles about 17 years ago with my wife and first child at the time. We had And we were going to have one more and we had twins. So, you know, there you go. Next thing I know, I'm driving a minivan anyways. Yep. And so, so live up here, right now work at a and a half for 17 years. Almost. I run a wellness center at the Stanford Inn and Resort. It's a resort down in Mendocino, just about 10 miles south of where I live. And I've written 4 books and I launched a 50K of my own, in 2016, I think. It's in its 7th year. I had to take 2 years off for COVID, but it'll be in its 7th year this April, the Mendocino Coast 50K. I'm a small steps coach. So I teach my specific brand of stress management and habit change. I'm a nutritionist and running coach and a breathwork coach. And, I got my hands and moved over from LA where I was a full-time musician. And I mentioned that only because I still play and just recorded a new album for the first time in 15 years and down in Los Angeles, and it's being mastered, which is kind of cool. And this is sort of the setup to say, you were telling me about your runners and I still do trail runs even amidst all the things that I do. And so that's the idea, is I'm a very normal, regular guy. I'm a father of 3 and husband, do a bunch of stuff and also get on the trails. And that's kind of me in a nutshell.
And I think you found trail running a little bit later in life, kind of like I did.
46. Yeah. 45 is when I ran my first marathon. So I also want your herd to know that I am not an elite athlete by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, when people go, you're an ultra runner. And so that's sort of the reaction. But anyways, yeah. So came to it very late. I ran 2 marathons when I was 45 that year and did not connect to them. I was like, okay, well, that's that. And stumbled upon trail running via an article in Men's Health, which was written by the guy who eventually wrote Born to Run. And I'm not joking. This is when I first realized people ran on trails. I had no idea. I just thought people, you hike on trails. That's what you do. You go on a hike. And I was like trail runners. And so they're not wearing hiking boots. They're going out in shoes. And just on a lark, I jumped on a trail and ran. And it was like a light bulb. I was like, this is it. This is for me. And then I, had also through that article in the book realized that people were running ultra distances. And so just decided to sign up for a 50 mile of the American River 50. So at 46, I did that race, and in training for that race, did the Way Too Cool 50K as a training race for the 50 miler. So that year I did those 2 ultras. And then the following year, I launched my own race and I run that the day before. And I've done a couple other races, besides that. So yeah, that was late, very late in life comparatively. But then again, I always have at least 4 people over 70 run my 50K every year. Amazing. So this is why I love this sport so much and why I'm super not a competitor in it. I like the longevity aspect of what this can bring. It's very cool.
Yeah. Similar to a lot of our listeners who were road runners, discovered the trails, fell in love with the trails. I'm curious, you said you tried the trails, fell in love with it. What was it about trail running that really resonated?
I gotta tell you, the short answer is I felt like an animal. It was very much of a like being wild again. And it was like, I like moving side to side and letting the terrain dictate pace and just being disconnected. And I live rural anyways. And so pretty quickly there's no cell signal. And I was like, there's no cell. And then I was like, this is amazing. There's no cell signal, And so I'd be on the trails and just kind of moving through the world that way was something I had never experienced. I mean, flat out never experienced, even on hikes had never experienced it. Running through the trails like that was a very, it was profound and it hooked me, like a drug. I was like, this is the thing. And to this day, and even when I trained for my first, that 50 miler, I made a decision on purpose just to see if I could do it, which was the hardest thing I've ever done, I think, which was to not train with any music or podcast or anything. I trained silent. And that was just a thing of like, can I do this? Can I shut myself off, disconnect from the social media news phone thing? And that's stuck with me ever since. I still don't train with that stuff. I like the whole kind of, presence that it brings.
Being in the
demands.
Yep, vans, exactly right.
Yeah.
And a lot of our listeners, too, that are fairly new to trail running, they stumble upon our podcast. If you can recall, this is back in, I think you said 2016 when you started doing that. What were some of the things you're like, this is different? Like, these, what are some of the things you learned as a brand new trail runner back in 2016?
I think that the multiple muscle groups that were not exercised on a road, and it's no news, but roads and treadmills are artificially flat and nice, clean, right angles. And we've expected those things. And then we get on a trail and we're bouncing side, we're side to side. And my legs were sore in the best way possible, by the way, but in different areas than it had ever been sore. And I didn't have that, repeated movement joint issues at all. And I had sort of gotten past that stuff anyways, just because of dietary changes. That's why I decided to run a marathon, was I was feeling pretty good and recovering better than ever before. But then getting on a trail is even better. So it would be a taxing run, but not taxing in the musculoskeletal way that road running was, you know, just the pound, you know. And I kind of eased into more of a minimalist running gait at that point, and sort of getting to the shoes that didn't have a lot of padding, you know. I didn't ease my way in. I went too far too soon and stress fractured my foot. Then I was like, this is amazing. And came, you know, and then I eased my way in after I healed up for about 6 months and just took my time to get away from the ultra, you know, a lot of padding and things like that. Sure. And to this day, I still run that way. And so that's what I remember, just feeling worn out in an awesome way, you know, like in a full body, this right. is what it's supposed to feel like way. And I always remember that, still do.
Yeah, it's not just the feet hurt, it's everything hurts.
Right. Yeah. It's just, you know, and then once in a while you fall and things like that. But yes. When you don't pay attention, you know.
Some more than others. Some Clydesdales tend to fall quite a bit.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love about trail running is there's so many ways to participate. You can, you know, you can cheer a friend on, you can be part of their crew, you can pace them, you can be a runner yourself, there's lots of ways. You kind of dove head first. I mean, you're a coach, you're a race director, you obviously run in races, you write books about it. What was it about trail running? You said, I'm all in. I don't want to just be a participant. I want to really kind of go full send on trail running.
Yeah. Well, only one book on it. My other books are more about my, you know, health kind of happiness kind of, you know, approach, but the trail running really inspired me, and it has for the year. I mean, I remember training for the 50 miler, and I tend to get lost very easily. So I would sometimes get the distance and I would just run along Highway 1. I'm right on the Pacific Coast Highway, you know, again, north. And so there was a day where I was running in a thunderstorm. Yeah, that's how we are. But anyways, so I'm running in a thunderstorm and I'm running down Highway 1 because I needed to do like a 20 miler that day or whatever. So I was running to the next town and back. And this little pickup truck pulls next to me, kind of slows down and then pulls in front of me. And I'm like, okay, now what's happening, you know? And this girl gets out and she's like, hey, I'm a runner. Do you ever need people to run with? And I go, sure. And then I'm sort of like, yeah, but listen, I'm training for a 50. And she goes, well, I just did 100. I go, okay, I think we're good. Yeah, you know? And so her name is Sid. And still to this day, she's one of my training partners. And so she moved out of the area, but when she's back in the area, and she always volunteers, she helps with my race. She helps crew me the day before the whole thing. But anyways, so she's a longtime horse rider and also a runner. So she knew all the local trails. So she started taking me on these trails. And very quickly, I was like, first of all, you don't see anybody. I don't care what time of year. It's amazing. You're just out there and it's the most beautiful thing. And it changes and incredible. And then you break out and you see the ocean. It's just nuts. Anyways, I said, so what ultra is like in the area? And she goes, there's not an ultra in the area. And I just, on Lark, I was like, there should be an ultra in this area. This is crazy that there's no ultra marathon. Like, this is begging for it. And so I just got back to the resort and I started researching from scratch. And I just, my only rule was, I want to make this race the race that I would want to run myself. So the way I crafted it to the detail is the race that I would want to run. And I just started reaching out to people and going, do you have any information for me? And one guy sent me a marathon race director guidebook, and it was enough, close enough where I was like, okay, so I got to get in touch with State Park, and I got, you know, and I kind of just little bit by little bit. And that first year sold out slowly. Like a month in, I was only 8 people. And I was like, well, I guess I'll run it with them and take them out to lunch, you know? And I thought, forget. And then by a month later, I had 75 and I upped it to 100. Then that met 100. And then every year after that, I cap it at 150 and it sold out every year.
And tell us a little bit about that race, because and when it is, and if someone's interested in doing it, how they would find out more.
Yeah, it's every year. It's the closest Saturday to Earth Day. So this in 2024, it's April 20th. It just landed on that day. So it's been the 22nd, 23rd, 18th, whatever. And so again, crafted it the way I would want to run it. So things that make a difference to me, that maybe don't make a difference to anybody else. But I started at 7:30. Which is very reasonable. Like I go 7:30 start time. I don't want to be too early. So that's just my craziness of thinking. I cap it at 150. Two reasons, main reasons. One is I like the intimate personal nature of the race. I greet every runner when they come across the finish line from start to finish, like every single runner. But because there's 150, they can all park right where the start finish is. You could show up literally 5 minutes before the start time, park and be fine. It's a loop. So there's no shuttles. There's no park here and there, take a shuttle, wait for a shuttle, school bus, and you're sore and you're sitting in the back. I've done it, sitting in the back of a school bus, cramping up for 45 minutes to get back to your car. Yeah. So things like that. I feed everybody. So the Stanford Inn where I work, they sponsor and they provide all the food. not just the runners. I mean, everybody. Like, you could show up to watch the race and eat. I don't mark off bib numbers and things like that. So there's things that I really, really love. And I just wait. I just wanted to hit certain points. Redwood, rivers, waterfall, ocean, beach. At the very end, they hate me, but they're soft sand, like the last quarter mile, and then the finish. And it's just a really beautiful thing. Anyway, it's MendocinoUltra.com. And I do recommend people, if they are interested, get on the mailing list. Because what I do is, I have no social media. I just email the mailing list about a week before I open registration and say, I'm opening registration on this day, give everybody a fair chance. And then it's just sort of what it is. It's sold out in 5 hours. And that's the only promotion I do for the race. Not wow. even kidding. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. It does sound like the kind of race I'd want to do.
It's a pretty cool race. Yeah. And I always run the course the day before. So it's really cool to be, I get out of the trail myself with my buddy, Skip Brand, who wrote the foreword of the book, and he's a way better trail runner than I am. Anyways, he and I do the course together, and we add some marking, and my buddy Sid crews us, and it's just become this great tradition. A lot of returners come and do it every year. And it's very cool.
I love it. Well, let's dive into the book. You mentioned the book there, and I got to say to the Big Ass Runner Herd, if this isn't the perfect title for us, Ultra Running for Normal People, Life Lessons Learned on and Off the Trail. Fantastic. What was it, Sid, that said, you've written other books about other topics. Hey, I need to write one about trail running.
Because my experience as a regular guy doing it, what I realized pretty quickly that this was affecting my on trail life. In other words, the things I learned from being on trails have become, and they've progressed. So this is my fourth book, but it was like time. I was like, these themes are coming up more. I'm seeing ultra running as like the very perfect, and I don't think there's anything like it, balance to the trappings of the modern world. And so it's just getting more and more heightened. So it started to be like, you know, that kind of pit, that fever pitch of like, I've got to get more people on the trails. That's just kind of my thing. I was like, this is amazing. Now, what stops people, as you know, is they go, I could never do that. I was like, yes, you could, because if I can do it, you definitely can do it. Yep. And so I thought there needs to be a book out there that is appealing to people who never in a million years would think they could do an ultra or even think they can get on a trail. And what this can bring them as a balance to the stress and craziness that we're all inundated with and sometimes through our phones, you know? So I just thought, whatever. And I just, the publisher that did my third book said he was kind of interested. Then he kind of bowed out. And I just started randomly, you know, emailing publishers. And one of them, Blue Star Press, the owner is an ultra runner. She's like, I definitely want to see the proposal. And then we signed the contract because it was like, she saw what I saw. And she's definitely not an elite athlete either. And so it was just like this, oh, this is a thing for people, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's what our podcast is based on. So
that's right. You said, and I was like, there's no brainer, you know?
Well, one thing I love about the way you've laid the book out, you've laid it out in 9 lessons. And we're not going to talk about all 9 because we definitely want people to go out and get the book.
Right.
But I want to talk about a few of them. And lesson 1 resonated with me because lesson 1 is about to move through fear. Talk to us more about what that means.
Well, you know, and this bleeds into my, you know, coaching with, you know, stress management, things like that, because what stops people and what is hindering people from any multitude of things that we might want to do in our lives is fear. I might fail at it. Fear of failure. What if I succeed? You know, that kind of thing. And just, I can't do it well, you know? And so night before an ultra run is maybe I'm an outlier, but I'm usually terrified.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's usually like, why am I, you know, why it's the
imposter syndrome.
Why am I doing this? Why would I do this? Why would I take this on? This is going to be a nightmare, you know, all the da, 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 da. And in my coaching, I realized that it is not about, and this is a struggle, Jeff. So I'm not going to tell you that I've solved it. I know where I want to go. So I'm on my way, but I haven't gotten there and may never. But I realized that it's the energy wasted in trying to make that fear go away is energy wasted. And so what I have learned to do better and better and still not there, but is to coexist with that. Now in the trail running sphere, that is true, but then I saw it bleed into the other thing. So recently somebody said to me, a friend of mine, she's like, you do all this stuff. You must not be afraid of anything. And I was like, I'm afraid of everything. Like, so the perception is because I do these things, I'm just fearless. It's like, no, I've learned how to negotiate and be okay with being terrified and then have that part of my brain go, okay, that's scary, but I'm going to do it anyways. And that's the struggle. That's with me and every client that I've ever worked with is you know, eating better, moving, you know, whatever they're doing, is to be okay with the fear. Okay, fine, I'm afraid, and then move on. And you fail sometimes and you succeed sometimes, but over time that is the struggle. And, you know, the better we get at it, the better we live, period.
And you mentioned this, but I agree that you don't solve that. It is a process. Maybe it gets a little bit easier. Sometimes you're like, wait, why am I so scared right now? Sometimes you take a step back. Have you found some things that you're coaching your clients on, that you talk about in the book, that helps you? Okay, I'm afraid. I have fear here, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So in my approach, what I do before they do any, I hate the word mantra because it's just whatever, but my mantra, if I had to say mantra, is mind first, body second. And what I mean by that is, with my clients, I'm taking them through weeks of thinking and writing and not doing any changes in the world. They always go, well, I'm going to change. I go, no, not there yet. And the reason is because I have them anchor themselves when they're not in a fear place, when they're not in a stress place, when they're not in a pressure to do anything about it place, of who they are and what they stand for. So I know that when I'm calm and mellow, I'm an ultra runner. And knowing that in my mind, I go, that's what I want to do. I want to do trail ultras. And what that does is carries me through the night before when I'm terrified and questioning all that. I can refer to this thing that I made a decision for when I wasn't afraid. And I can go, yes, but regardless of how I feel right now, this is a decision. This is something I decided to do when I wasn't in a fear state. So I'm just going to trust that that's the real me. And it's, like I said, there's sometimes fails and sometimes successes, and the successes start to outweigh the failures, and you just keep moving on every day. And it keeps, and by the way, with my clients, it's like, how do they ideally eat? Then that guides them when they're craving something that they, the real them, doesn't want. And they can see the difference. They might give into the craving that time, but they know that's not who I am. And they know, and they can learn from that next time. So it's, first of all, the knowledge. We jump right to the thing. And I go, don't do that yet. Don't change what you eat. Don't just eat the same stuff. Let's decide how you want to eat first. Then you can start seeing how that changes in the world over time.
I love it. Let's jump into lesson two. I thought it was really interesting to slow down. Talk to us more about what that means.
Yeah. And again, every one of these lessons is how it affected me in my life outside of trail running too. When I trained for my first 50, I had no idea. I wasn't a running coach yet, and I was very recreational, you know, a couple miles here, a couple miles there, runner. I hired a coach, and the reason is because I had no idea what I was doing, as you know, and I listened to this guy on the Ultra Runner podcast named Matt Flaherty, and he seemed funny and cool, and I was like, I'll give him a call, whatever. And he was like, I don't have money, so he was like super cheap. I was like, really? You know, like nothing. He probably lives out of a van. You know how ultra running is. Anyways, and so I hired him for just the first 2 months just to get me roll in and kind of set me in a direction of, okay, what is it really taking here? He put me on strength training and stuff that I never would have guessed myself. But one of the first things out of his mouth was, what's your normal pace? I said, eight and a half minute mile. He goes, okay, so we're going to slow that down by about 3 minutes per mile. And I was like, well, no, I can. And he's like, no. You can do that for 2 miles, but you can't do that for 50. And that was a absolutely game-changing thing. Again, for me, I'm not trying to win a race. Never have, don't care, never look at my time. Don't even wear a watch when I run. Do not care. But the slowing down and profoundly made a change in me, which was I started to enjoy running more. I started to be able to think and ponder and whatever while I was on the trail. I started to be able to come home and hang out with my kids and my wife and have a good day instead of being crashed on the couch that I was doing when I was training for my first marathon and following a training plan perfectly. I'd be exhausted the rest of the day and sore. And it allowed my body to physically adapt. So I was doing longer runs, but at such a low stress state. Now we call it zone two, but I didn't even know that at the time, but just conversational, breathing slow, no problem, that level. What also came up interestingly was a machismo that I didn't even realize was in me, because every time somebody would pass me, I'd have this urge to go, I could go faster, you know, like slowing down so significantly. And the only times I wore watches at that point and for years until I just stopped altogether, because now I kind of go by feel rate of, you know, RP and stuff, was to make sure I was going slow enough. It was literally looking at my watch going, oh, okay, I got to slow down. Okay, I got to slow down. Okay, I got to slow down. And it allowed me to continue doing this sport and feeling great and not injuring myself and not, you know, anyways. And then of course, translating to the world of taking time to slow down, taking time to actually recover. You know, I'm not good at on days off. I still feel like I should probably get something done. And I've had to make a real concerted effort to not do stuff as much as I do to do stuff.
I love it. Yeah. It's not slowing down just in pace. It's just slowing down
mind
in a lot of different areas. Recoveries. We talk about a lot about recovery on this show, because without recovery, you don't get those incremental gains that you would have gotten had you let your body restore, recoup, and then, you know, go beyond where you were.
Well, I'll just add that I do find, well, I did in the beginning, overtraining is more of a problem than undertraining. You know, and if your goal isn't to win the ultra, if your goal is just to have a good day and recover well and have fun at it, it takes a lot less training than people think. And I'm living proof of that as well. So yeah, it's just sort of that whole slowing down. Like, are we really, the world is crafted to, you know, power yoga and speeding up our metabolism. It's all charge ahead. And ultra running says, take it easy. Start to enjoy. The guy who wrote this, the forward, Skip Brown, he calls it trail surfing. I was like, that's the perfect, like, trail surfing. He's like, you go out and you just like surf the trails, you know? And it's like, that's so great. That's exactly what the experience I've had. You know, he coined that phrase. It's great.
I love it. Yeah. The other thing I like about this lesson, slow down, when I have people, you meet someone, you tell them, you know, what you do, you ultimately, you know, we like to talk about trail running. Oh, I hate running.
I know.
And then I ask them, well, what's your running experience? Oh, you know, sprints after practice.
Yeah.
Or suicides, you know, during basketball or whatever. I said, you need to slow down. If you slow down, because most people associate running, their experience has been high pace, lack, you know, the acid, want to throw up. Like, that's not what we're talking about. If you slow down, you'll enjoy it so much more.
Yeah. And on a training level, it's advantageous, you know, to run most of your runs at that level. And yeah, people, you know, I was in pain all the time. My knees hurt all the time. So I've had a couple clients where I'm like reestablishing their love of running. You know, to the sense I'm like, slow down even more. So you should finish a 5-mile run and just walk in the door and almost feel like you didn't run at all. And that was an experience I had never experienced. And which was, when I was slowed down like that, I'd finish a 10-12 mile run, get out of the car, and I'd be like, I almost feel like I haven't run today. That is a completely weird thing. And your perspective changes. You know, I remember the coach one time in the first 2 months, he had me do a back-to-back long weekend, you know? And so that was interesting to get on tired legs and the next day. And then all of a sudden he's into it, go slow and your body adjusts. Yeah. But also the perspective, he'd go, I want you to do a 12 miler on Sunday. And I'd be like, oh, thank goodness, only a 12 miler. You know, like that is your whole mindset shifts around this stuff. It's such a weird thing. I'd run a half marathon on a Sunday as part of training. And it was no big deal, you know?
Yeah. My friend Timmy Time, who's on the show, and I joke about that. One time we said, yeah, we're only doing the 25K.
Yeah, just doing that.
You know, that's more than most people have ever run in their entire life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's how your brain changes, the perspective of your brain changes. You know, it's so cool.
It really does. Well, as I mentioned, there's 9 lessons. We're going to talk about 3. The third one I want to talk about, I want to skip over to lesson number 4, and that's pay attention to everything. Tell us more about that.
That was, and I'll link it to the slowing down part too, because in slowing down enough, I was no longer in this space of like, I just got to get through this run and feeling the stress of pushing too hard and kind of being in that world. By slowing down enough, I was able to, without being hippie, because I don't have a hair for it, but be in kind of a meditative state. And so that's number one, but going slow enough. But number two, as you know, if you zone out and don't pay attention on trails, you will fall. And I've done that multiple times, bloodied. And so I really started to appreciate what I call in the book, wild attention. This idea of not sitting on a pillow in front of a candle in a perfectly temperature controlled environment and everybody in the family has to be quiet while you meditate. And instead being out on a trail and hearing your footsteps, hearing your breath, paying attention to the wind and the temperature and the terrain and effortlessly. Or I'll just put it this way. You have feedback, because if you don't do it again, you fall, you trip, or you stub your toe or something, and you kind of get back and it's like, I need to. And it's just that sort of our experience of meditation as human beings is our mind chatters and we come back to present. Our mind chatters and we come back. Well, same thing happens on the trail, but you're not really trying to meditate. And it's a very, very cool thing. And I think that what that did for me was place a sort of foundation of attention, a greater attention in my life, paying attention to things like being with my family, you know, like actually being with them, not being on the phone in the same room, but like being with them, trying to appreciate the things that we have. Trail running absolutely affected the quality of my life in that regard. Being grateful for the things that I do have, appreciating things that I do have, that just days for some people and me go by and all of a sudden it's like, I'm not having fun because I'm not realizing all the things that are actually good.
Yeah.
And separating from social media and separating from, you know, all those kinds of things, at least I did it fully, but even with clients, I'm like, just cut into the time a little bit, you know, with present time. And trail running really did a good job on that for me.
Yeah, we talk a lot about trail running as, you know, because you and I both came from road running to trail running. Road running for me tends to be more about the finish line, more about the destination.
For me too.
And trail running is a little bit more about the journey.
That's right.
And the journey, what we love about it is things happen on that journey that you may not expect. You know, you, especially in a trail race, there's peaks and valleys, ups and downs. I've actually met some people that I coach and I'm friends with on the trail that I never knew. Because you're present, you're noticing everything. I was running one race and came across a runner. She had some really cool shoes I'd never seen before. I asked her about her shoes, and now I'm coaching her today. Nice. So it's, you know, it's just it is that soak in the experience.
That's right.
Kind of goes back to your, you know, lesson two, which is slow down. Mm-hmm. Lesson four, note, you know, pay attention to everything. Soak it all in.
That's right.
And then to your point earlier too, I think it makes you more a more empathetic person when you're noticing things like, hey, that person seems he's less jolly than normal. What's going on? Maybe I should ask, ask a question, or I observe this thing. I just think slowing down and noticing can really help us as people just become a little bit more empathetic as well.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that trail running gets you there in a way that doesn't take as much effort. You know, there's obviously the effort of the running itself, but in terms of the mental state when you're out there on a trail, it just begs your attention. You know, you don't see animals sitting on a pillow in the middle of the forest meditating because they'll get killed, you know? And so it's sort of like we can zone out in the modern world because we have phones and we have all the entertainment and we have junk food and drugs and alcohol, but having some time to be disconnected and present in a way that doesn't take a ton of effort is life-changing for real. And that's why I put that as one of the lessons, because it was for me and is for me, you know, continuing. These are all things that I still continue to work on day to day.
Well, the book is great. As I mentioned, there's 9 lessons. That's 3 of them, and we just touched the very top surface of them. So definitely go out and get the book. It's called Ultra Running for Normal People by Sid Garza Hillman. And Sid, where can people find it? I know it's not quite released yet. We're getting a little bit of an early look at it. Tell us about when it's going to be released and where people can find it.
It'll be released on February 6th, 2024, for people who are listening to this whenever, and it's everywhere. So the publisher's Blue Star Press, and it's distributed by Penguin Random House. So it's all over the place internationally too. If you go to SidGarzaHillman.com, my main site, there's a book page with links to like Australia and Japan, whatever, and all around the world, Turkey even, and obviously in the US, it's on all the platforms and physically in stores too. So that's where you go, SidGarzaHillman.com, and then you can get to my YouTube channel through there and my podcast, What Sid Thinks, and my Small Steps coaching through there. It's kind of the main portal of where that goes. But that's kind of it, because I'm not on social media. So like there's no Instagram, Facebook, Twitter handles or anything like that.
Got it. I love that, actually. That's great. And I'd imagine it's probably a great gift book too. If you have a friend that's like, yeah, I don't know if I really want to do this ultra running thing. I'm sure it's almost like an introduction into, hey, this could be for you. You may think you're not an ultra runner, but maybe you could be.
That's kind of that is really the idea. The idea is, my ideal with this book is that somebody goes, yeah, all right. And, you know, I'll try it, even if they don't make it. And my passionate sell in that book is when you toe the line, you've already succeeded. And when you can get past this, like what the result was, if you attempt an ultramarathon, I'm like, great. I never ask an ultramarathon, what was your time? I couldn't care less what an ultramarathoner's time is. I don't care. I go, did you have a good day? Did you have fun? Did you finish? How'd you do? Didn't finish? Yeah. Okay, cool. When's the next one? You know, it's like that's this world for you and me. There's elite athletes out there trying to win, and I get it, and that's amazing, and I'm in awe of them. It's just not me, and I have no interest even in coaching elite athletes. I want to know, can regular people who you would go, that person's an ultra runner? That's what I love. That's the stuff that gets me totally excited, is when a 75-year-old woman crosses my finish line and gets pissed at me because there's a rope that you climb down, and she goes, I'm too old for this crap. And I go, really, are you? Because you just did 33 miles and killed it in a time faster than I could do. So I think clearly you're not too old for it. You know, that's the stuff that I go, wow, that's so cool. Lights me up.
I love it. Me too. Well, we always like to finish with our guests with some quick hitter questions. These are not related to the book. This is just more about you. And this first one's actually a two-parter. So biggest race mistake that you've made as a runner and that you've observed as a race director?
This is no surprise, but going out too fast. You know, yeah. And even when I run the course the day before, I will wear a watch that day to, cause skip goes way faster than I do. And I always look down on my watch, go skip. I got to slow down, skip. I got to slow down. And cause that's always that first 5 miles. That's a killer, you know? And then you hit the trails and the hills and you're like, why did I go out so fast? So yeah, that's the number one thing for me.
And is that true for you as a runner and what you've observed as a race director?
Correct. And when I announce before the race starts, I go, everybody who's here for the first time, all your nerves in the first 4 miles were real easy and kind of open path. And you're going to get all extra confident and you're going to kill the first aid and you're going to see how great you're feeling. Then you're going to cut off into a single track and you're going to be pissed at yourself. So nice and easy, way slower than you could possibly go.
Yep. Love it. All right. Favorite aid station food?
I'm going to Coca-Cola. Is that a food?
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Table.
Yeah. Do you ever heard of John Mettinger? He was the president of the Western States. Okay. And his wife loves my race and she's become a buddy and she's run a few times. She's running it this April. John came to one of the races. It was the first race. It was the first year. And he's just this real understated guy. And he walks by and he goes, you got to have Coke at the aid stations. And ever since then, I was like, I got to have Coke at the aid stations. Always do Mexican Coke at the aid stations. That's what I do. That's what I do. And one of the races I did, the North Face 50K, North Face Endurance 50K, tough race. And I was at mile 26 and starting to really feel it. And it was the first time that I had Coke at an aid station. And I was like, it was like the best. It was just that it wasn't even that much. It was the taste. It was like my childhood. It was like, this is putting me in a good mood for the last 7 miles of this race, you know? Yep. And so that's probably my very favorite thing.
I got to tell a quick funny story about that. Not about Coke, but I was thinking about Mountain Dew, because that Mountain Dew is also another one people really like. And we run the Chiapas aid station out in Bandera. And in fact, we're doing it this weekend. And last year it was a gold ticket race.
Okay.
So we had a lot of elite runners come through and you'd think, because it was our third year to run the aid station, we put the Mountain Dew cups, because we poured little amounts in a little cup.
Yep.
We could just, you know, these elites are running through there quick. Right next to the pickle juice. And guess what happened?
That's a tough one. Man, I saw that a mile away. Oh, man, this Mountain Dew is going to taste, holy crap.
I have it on video. It's quite.
Oh, that's so good. What mile is that, aid station?
It's at mile 20 and 40.
You're lucky you didn't get murdered. Because at that, you were like pretty fatigued at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. What about favorite piece of gear?
Well, this is an odd one, but for me, when I started trail running and not having things in my head, I started to have unexpectedly ideas come down for podcasts and videos and songs even. So I bought this little digital tape recorder. I know I could use my phone, but I like to not have the phone anywhere near either in my pocket, and that's it. But this little digital I can't remember the brand, Casio or something, little digital tape recorder, digital recorder. Oh. And I just pop button on, because on a 3 hour run, I would forget half the things I would think of. Right. So I just started documenting those things on the way. That's my favorite piece of gear. Cause I'd come back and I have ideas for miles that's no pun intended. Yeah.
I'm going to have to copy that one. I love that. Cause I was saying, we were talking before we hit record, you know, we started this podcast, me and my friend, Steven, who is running partner, because we would just talk about our experiences on the trails and stories, but half of them we've probably forgotten by the time we got through the race and the pain of it, we'd forgotten half of the things that happened.
You're out there a long time, you know, and I'd go for a 3-4 hour run and I know for sure I'd forget a large part. So I just bought the smallest one I could find. It's like $12 and it's the easiest one. So I don't have to look at it. You just button on, button off. And I would come back with a list of stuff. Sometimes I'd use them, sometimes I wouldn't, but I'd kept a fair amount.
That's great. Well, this one you might need to think about a little bit. So, you know, in baseball, they have a walk-up song. If you're coming to the plate, they have a walk-up song. Oh, what would you're walking up to the you're about to toe the line at a big race. What would your walk-up song be?
To get me pumped.
Yes.
It'd be Gouge Away by the Pixies.
Oh, wow.
One of my all-time favorite rock songs of all time. Now, the last race I did, which was the Lake Sonoma 55K, this is a weird thing, but the song Heaven Faced by the Nationals was on repeat I don't have AirPods. It was just in my head. Whatever it was in my brain, it was the perfect tempo for my pace. And I don't even know the song that well. I just kept repeating that one song. So I kind of have a sweet spot for that song right now, because it got me. It was a very tough day and it got me through that day. So that's my second favorite.
Love it. Good stuff. Well, this is the last one. And then we will let you go. But do you have a bucket list race? You're like, hey, before I hang it up, I really would love to do this race.
I don't know. I don't, man, there was one in Oregon and that I signed up for, then they moved the date and I couldn't do it. It's not, I don't really have a bucket list. I do not have a bucket race. I want to race more and I'm looking, but I don't have like the golden, like I've got to do that race. You know, there is one in Scotland that's like 240 miles or whatever over 5 days. That one kind of in my brain goes, that would be pretty cool. But I don't know if I could ever pull that off in terms of logistics, because it's not supported. But yeah, so I'm looking around.
Is there a part of the country you're like, hey, I'd love to do a race in this part of the country or world?
I think well, other than Scotland, which is you know, begging for that stuff. I think in the U.S. anyways, I think Oregon would be a pretty great place for me to go to know an ultra, just because I love it, and also Tahoe. But again, that, you know, I'm pretty close to Tahoe, but the elevation is a little bit intimidating at this point.
It is. I got a chance to go to Western States and serve this past year, and got to see part of the course, and it's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah.
Well, Sid, this has been a pleasure. I'm very excited for you and this book. And again, remind us on when it comes out and where you can find it.
Yeah, and Jeff, thank you so much for having me. And it was fun conversation. I hope the herd enjoys it. Anyway, so yeah, Ultra Running for Normal People. It's out February 6th, 2024, everywhere online and in stores, et cetera, et cetera. And SidGarzaHillman.com. is sort of the main place to just jump off to where, whatever else, and see where I'm going. I'll be in Colorado for 3 days. I'm doing events in Denver, Boulder, and Edwards to support the book just before, and then in Healdsburg for the book launch. And you can see all that stuff on the site.
Well, Sid, again, thanks for joining us. I know the Big Ass Runner herd definitely benefited from our conversation. So cool. Thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, cool.
Well, believe it or not, that is the end of episode number 186 of the Big Ass Runner. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Sid is a very interesting guy, doing a lot of things, including a lot of things in the trail running space. Make sure you check out his book. I really found his content around the everyday runner awesome, because really, if you think about trail running and ultra running, 99.9% is made up by us, the everyday runner. Well, as always, big thanks to the sponsors of the show. That is exoskin.us. If you need liners, toe socks, exoskin.us. And of course, our friends at John G, that's JANJI.com. Rain jackets are amazing. And of course, Blaze Trails. We love our friends at Blaze Trails. If you've not signed up for Grasslands, do it. It's coming up in March. Grasslands is a very runnable course. It's a lot of fun, a lot of distances to choose from. BlazeTrails.com. And of course, we have to give a big special thanks to our audio engineer who makes us sound so good. It's Steve Cinnamon Bear Saunders. Wow. And with that, get out there, hit those trails, and keep running your asses off. We will have hopefully completed our fourth year in a row at Chiapas aid station. I gotta stop smoking cigarettes. You don't.
You getting emotional?
Glad this isn't live.
Edit.
Sorry, something in my throat.